Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It's broadcast number 705, June the 10th, 1985. I mentioned last week Mrs. Joan B. Crock, KROC, put an ad in the newspaper, a quotation of General Eisenhower, and I wanted to read the exact quotation to you this week. I skipped over it too fast for you. This speech was given April 16th, 1953. She spent $500,000 placing this in 23 newspapers. This is the direct quotation. Every gun that is made, every warship launched, every rocket fired, signifies in the final sense a theft from those who hunger and who are not fed. Those who are cold and are not clothed. This world in arms is not spending money alone. It is spending the sweat of its laborers, the genius of its scientists, the hopes of its children. This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron. And speaking of cross of iron, the men that he worked with that influenced our whole nation later, such as Mr. Donovan and William Casey and Reinhard Galen and James Angleton, who affected our history up to the current hour, were all knighted by the Vatican, made sovereign military Order of Malta as soon as the war was over, and then came to influence turning the OSS into the CIA with the help of the Nazis, and we are hanging on their cross of iron. If you don't like it, get down, because the spear will pierce and that will be the end. But right now, we are hanging where Eisenhower said we were, and that cloud is now the actual acts that are taking place. This was a speech, April 16th, 1953. Now, in the early 50s, Robert Welch began to form the John Birch Society, named after a gentleman in the OSS, John Birch. Also assisting with that cross were people who were to be knighted by the Vatican, such as Alexander Haig, the protege of Fritz Kramer, Vernon Walters, General Walters, the Buckley family, and William Buckley, forming the Young Americans for Freedom. Now, the Birch Society was going to Southeast Asia to General Douglas MacArthur, to Charles Willoughby, actually Carl Weidenbach, the Japanese Mafia under Mr. Sasakawa, encouraging Reverend Moon in South Korea, and Taiwan with Chiang Kai-shek's family, the Asian connection to Germany, and Weidenbach going to the German school, military school, with Mr. Wiedemeyer, the American general that Ronald Reagan just honored recently. The cast of characters began to meld who were opposed to General Eisenhower and had selected their own person to take over from him, specifically Richard Nixon. But we're not going into that history now. I only bring it up because she's talking in her article that she has paid for Mrs. Crock about the necessity for having a world of peace. Her name is Joan B. Crock. She's the widow of Ray Crock, K-R-O-C, as I said. And quoting for her is a man named Mike Sund. She quickly took a trip, I guess because of the publicity of this material in these 23 newspapers. She went off to Europe, and she had a release statement for the news. In quotes, "I have been blessed with the means to put my convictions to work, and no conviction I have is greater than that nothing makes sense in our lives unless we create the basis for a decent and workable peace. We are sliding toward a total breakdown of human society because we are giving less attention to the need to protect the rights of generations to come than we are giving to our lawns or our swimming pools." Crock feels, in quotes, that it is important for American citizens to act and speak out on this issue. She's going August the 6th to Hiroshima to mark the 40th anniversary of the nuclear attack on that city. She will join leaders of the peace movement from around the world in urging the bilateral cessation of nuclear weapon testing. I hope she goes into Star Wars with Mr. Daniel Graham, General Daniel Graham, and Fritz Kramer, and Edward Teller and that nest that are planning something equally as bad as the atomic bomb. She's printing 500,000 copies of Missile Envy, a book by Helen Caldicott, and she's going to send these around to educators and government leaders. Now, we don't all have the means. She has the means to do this, to put her convictions to work. I am always complaining because it takes a lot of money just to get out the kind of work that I do and just get this message to a few people. Imagine if we could convert that 400,000 that she put in the newspaper, or I mentioned the 12,000 that Bill Graham put in the newspaper in San Francisco objecting to the Bitburg trip of Ronald Reagan. If you combine those two, you could set up a research center that would disseminate all these files and all the books that I have here to anyone in the United States who wanted them. Those were quickly placed in two newspapers, and I'm sure the effects will be great, but I wish somebody would tap a few of these multimillionaires and send them up to Via Crotola on Carmel and get them off their ass, and let's see if there's some positive steps to stop these people. Eisenhower gave that speech, but the very fact that he was president of the United States for 8 years and that nobody listened to him and nothing was put into action has brought us to where we are now. To call attention to it is one thing. To get the people who are doing it is something else. I decided not to go to Washington for that celebration because there will be a lot of people there and the time and money that it takes to get back there for just the street scene, as it were, is not as important as for me to continue what I'm doing here. So I've decided that that is a luxury. It's more expensive than getting a large amount of subscriptions that would cover me for the year that I need. And so I'm not going to take the trip back there. But for those of you that on the East Coast, I'll give you all the information about where to go, and you'll be reading about it August the 4th in Washington, D.C. And to help support this project, I've included on the sheet that goes with this broadcast the address of where you can get information of a large poster of the Ribbon Project or postcards, and there's a book that's coming out you can order, and that money will help with the massive project that is taking place. One woman, a very fine woman, Justine Merritt, got the idea for this project, and this just shows the power and the love that people can do as individuals that spreads around the world. I give her bravos. I think it's even more important than a one-page ad for $12,000 because this is a symbol of world love and world peace of all people, all kinds, not just a bomb dropping on our head, but a bringing out the best in us. And the 500 segments that they choose out of the thousands that are sent in will be put in the Peace Museum. It's going to be in Chicago, and they will be touring around the world. These fabrics will be touring around the world. So it's a large project with a lot of feeling, and you can still be a part of it for a long, long time. And if you want, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to me, and I'll give you all the information on the book, the poster, the meeting places, because August the 4th will come around quickly, and you should have information of where to help support the project and how to be part of it. Now on to Joseph Mengele. Michael Jackson had had Simon Wiesenthal on his broadcast last week, and he was interviewing him about the possibility whether that body was Joseph Mengele. And when the interview was over, he said he finalized it by saying that was Simon Wiesenthal, the man who spearheaded the drive to find Mengele. Nothing could be farther from the truth. I just shudder when I hear these things on the air. This man is getting or wants $5 million from the California taxpayers for his institute in Los Angeles, $30 million in Washington, D.C. He didn't spearhead this story. He has blocked it. He has stopped it. And as a matter of fact, he didn't even find Eichmann, but he got all the credit. And the original finding of Adolf Eichmann wasn't Wiesenthal. It's so horrendous to live with these lies. It just makes me shudder when I think how much information has gone to those people and how they've sat on it all this time. And then we come up with this other story and we're forced to examine it and scrutinize it for the lies that it is. The San Francisco Chronicle had a reprint of New York Times story yesterday about a woman, Gita Stammer, who said that her family housed Joseph Mengele. I'll get into the details of that in a little while or next week. But, pardon me, the important thing were, there are three comments at the bottom of the article. This was titled, In Other Developments. One, the police doctor who signed the death certificate of the man who drowned, Dr. Mendonca, M-E-N-D-O-N-C-A, told reporters that the body was a man of 53 years of age. Mr. Gerhardt, the name that Mengele allegedly used for a while, was also 53. and mainly at that time would have been 67. The second point they made was Menachem Russek, M-E-N-A-C-H-E-M, Russek, R-U-S-S-E-K, head of the Nazi War Crimes Unit of the National Police in Jerusalem, said, "I am convinced that man Mengele is alive, and this affair is happening because of the pressure he finds himself in. This is because of the pressure Mengele is in. Where is the pressure? The pressure comes from funding the John DeLorean Motor Company with the goal was to fund it with cash from cocaine profits. The pressure is locating banks where the cocaine money that went to Barbie went to Switzerland. The pressure is finding who put the money in the banks for Joseph Mengele and who the couriers were. He doesn't specify the pressures, and it wasn't ever Wiesenthal that brought these pressures out. But he says it's the pressure to find him. Who was looking for Joseph Mengele before the John DeLorean money was missing? When did his name last come in the news? Check the chronology of what we've had on World Watchers and as the story unfolded, and you'll see where the pressure was. The third point is that Brazilian authorities have reluctantly agreed to allow the United States and West German fingerprint and handwriting experts to work in the case. However, the forensic tests on the body exhumed will be carried out exclusively by Brazilian examiners. Now, the Brazilian doctors have worked with the top Nazis since the end of World War II. The Brazilian government was put in power by our Knights of Malta, such as Vernon Walters and William Casey and William Donovan, for 21 years. William Simon, another Knight of Malta, his name has been involved with Mr. Garnero and the financial scandals, as well as the Bechtel Corporation. And John McCone, the head of Bechtel, is a Knight of Malta, that sword of iron that we're hanging on. And the government had an election, and after 21 years, they decide to have less than a military dictatorship. On the eve the president-elect is to be inaugurated, he is poisoned and then subsequently dies. The 21-year-old dictatorship is still in power, and the medical examiners are there. Now, medical examiners change the course of history, just to cite three. John Kennedy's assassination. Now, the reason I objected to David Lifton's book, Best Evidence on the Autopsy of John Kennedy, is that you don't change history with a scalpel. You don't have to. You change history with a fountain pen. What the medical examiner writes is what is there. And that changed the entire history of the United States. We had our coup in 63, and Brazil had theirs in 64. The second autopsy that was a total lie was Howard Hughes. That medical examiner lied. It was Vance Cooper. It wasn't Hughes. And if they knew that from 1971 to 76 there was no Hughes, you would understand more about the merger this past week of General Motors with Hughes Aircraft, of Hughes Aircraft being able to put $5 billion into the medical institute, and I'll be doing a lot more on that in the weeks to come. One of the directors of the Hughes Medical Institute is from the DuPonts now, and DuPonts are working on AIDS, and I can make a strong case for the use of space stations and secret tests, which they're doing right now, up on the satellites on the disease AIDS, which could become a new plague to wipe out segments of our population. The takeover of the Hughes organization, selling the tool company, and now the aircraft, and putting the money into the medicine. I've warned and warned that the medical bomb is as explosive as the atomic bomb that people simultaneously should be watching. The medical bomb, the spread of disease, and the possibility of wiping out large segments of the world and changing their minds and their bodies. The autopsy of Robert Kennedy assassination, the lying about the double bullets, and John Kennedy, the triple assassins, and Robert Kennedy, the double. And where did Edgar Eugene Caesar go? Where did he go after he shot Robert Kennedy from the back of the head? To Riverside, to work with the Nazis linked to the Aryan Nations, to Richard Butler. They both worked at Lockheed together in Glendale, to the worldwide computers of Nazis around the world. Those three autopsies changed the course of history, and now these Brazilian examiners want to work exclusively on that particular body. But as it was interesting that from Jerusalem they said this is all happening because of the pressure. Now, Bonn newspaper came out just today This is June the 10th. And it says, Bonn newspaper quotes the medical examiners. They assume the body is Joseph Mengele. Now, Bonn wants to end this issue once and for all. This is the Bonn government of Helmut Kohl, of Mr. Kohl's decisions to go to Bitburg to later rest all antagonism towards the Waffen-SS. And incidentally, and as soon as I can, I'm going into the role of our former National Security Advisor, Richard Allen, and Helmut Kohl and the German government and the money that started that Georgetown Center for all the covert action and counterintelligence that's been going on with Claire Sterling and Michael Ledeen. I'll be doing more on that later. But West Germany Bonn government, they sent their examiners to Brazil last week to examine this body. The three investigators drew a conclusion after questioning an Austrian couple and so forth that, who had sheltered Joseph Mengele. They said, according to the facts now at hand, it is to be assumed that the corpse buried on the 8th of February, 1979, under the name of Wolfgang Gerhardt, is Joseph Mengele. Now, I don't know why it is to be assumed at all that that is the case. The people that housed, if they housed Mr. Mengele for a while, and I don't doubt that that wasn't one of his safe houses, the same gentleman that said that he died on that particular day was the man who was swimming when the Mr. Gerhardt substitute drowned. The 53-year-old who drowned while swimming was swimming under the name, of, allegedly, of Wolfgang Gerhardt, and then supposed to be Joseph Mengele. This is all a convoluted lie. The Bonn newspaper didn't say how it had obtained the report. D. Welt, D-I-E-W-E-L-T, is the newspaper. It has close contacts with West German law enforcement and carries exclusive police work. Well, how would they get the report? They wrote the report that it was him. So they assume, as if you have to assume it. Die Welt implied that the West German authorities were upset by the way the Brazilian authorities were exhuming the body. The Germans tried and did not have any influence in the way it was exhumed. The skeleton was not salvaged complete with the casket, but single parts were taken out unsystematically, and the casket stayed in the grave. Did you see how they threw bones out? Now, when they dug up one casket in Germany to find a certain Nazi, Mr. Mueller, who was supposed to be dead, they opened up the casket, and there were three bodies in there. But here they're taking parts of a body, and you don't know if there's somebody else's bones in there, too, or what. They just threw them in a box and went. Asked by the investigators why they didn't report him, they asked the Bossarts who hid this burial for all this time. They said not for ideological reasons, but that they were humanitarians, that it was a humanitarian reason, not to say Mengele was dead. To have people looking for Nazis all these years was humanitarian, even though they're close with the Nazis. The fate of the fugitive is worse than a death sentence, they were quoted as saying. Well, if the fate of a fugitive is so bad, he's not a fugitive anymore when he's dead, so why protect him? Nothing about this makes sense. You're not being humanitarian to protect a dead man who was once a fugitive. You just say he's dead, but that doesn't make sense. It says the Bossarts kept his secret away and kept that because they feared revenge by the Israeli agents. So again, it's the Jews who are to blame. The Jews will get him. The Jews will come. The Jews will get us. The Jews would follow them, and then they'd find more Nazis because I'm sure their farms were safe houses for other Nazis. And so they weren't going to tell what happened, but they were a convenient source to pull the Mengele story if anybody really got hot on Joseph Mengele. And certainly with a $4 million reward, or $3.5 million, there's a lot of people wanting Mengele, and there's a lot of poor people. A well-known plastic surgeon in Brazil, in São Paulo, Brazil, said there are substantial differences between the photo files of the Auschwitz death camp doctor and those discovered in the possession of these people down there. A professor of plastic surgery was talking about the physical differences. Now, when I sent the letter to the White House and to these 90 members of the press, and then other letters to members of Congress on Fritz Kramer and the shenanigans going on with subterfuge of the two Kramers, who are they? Are they the same Kramer? I hadn't yet gotten information until a week later about a Mr. Fritz Kramer going to Europe to the Zurich accounts with meeting Mr. Felix Steinecker, Mengele's attorney over in Switzerland. I learned that after I got the letter out. But I did enclose in that letter a page from Paul Manning's book, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. And I hope if the people that received that letter from me, some of them didn't throw it away, I hope that they would read it and pull it out today, because this is so appropriate to what was to follow that I don't know how, but I felt it was important to put it in that letter. Maybe some of you may ask yourself why at that time, but I sent this out April 22nd to these various people, and the news story about Joseph Mengele didn't break until June the 6th. And it's about the CIA trying to end the speculation that Martin Bormann is alive, and they held a press conference in Frankfurt to declare that Martin Bormann died in Berlin in 1945. This is a press conference that took place in 1972. A crew of ditch diggers unearthed two skeletons in Berlin and tried to locate. They realized that this was an area where they tried to locate Martin Bormann a while back, and they were 20 yards from the previous effort. And a military person, Mr. Stumpfeger, Stumpfeger, Hitler's physician, had left the bunker with Bormann in 1945, and they found two skulls in 1972. So they started to say that this was Martin Bormann and Dr. Ludwig Stumpfeger. So Dr. Hugo Blasch, Blaschke, we've talked about him before, Blaschke, I guess in German you'd pronounce it. He met with the Frankfurt Press. The Frankfurt Germany investigators, the ones working closely now with this Mengele story in Brazil. And they went into the dental records and tried to show various means by which they could say, absolutely, this was Martin Bormann. And you, Trevor Roper, he's from the London Times and British intelligence, high up in British intelligence, who had said that Hitler had died in the bunker, said in the New York Times, January 14th, 1973, I have my own reasons for thinking that Bormann may have escaped to Italy and then South America. Now, he was willing to bury Hitler, but he, even in that late date, 73, thought Bormann was alive, and Simon Wiesenthal is going around saying that Martin Bormann is dead. And the book, Nazi in Exile, by Paul Manning, it was published by Lyle Stewart in 1981, tells about Mr. Wiesenthal went to the heart of the matter unknowingly, and he saw the information in Frankfurt at that time and thought there was a slight difference in the skull structure. And then this book goes on to say that he went to the heart of the matter, for the alleged Bormann skull was that of a grisly stand-in, a substitute whose teeth and entire dental structure was carefully prepared over a period of time on an inmate in a concentration camp in Sachsenhausen. Let me pronounce it for you. Spell it S-A-C-H-S-E-N-H-A-U-S-E-N. Sachsenhausen, who looked almost like Martin Bormann, and not quite. So they substituted this body and the dental records of the man saying those were Martin Bormann's and tried to bring them together, and it didn't match, even though Wiesenthal still says Bormann is dead. Now, in this book, Paul Manning says, substituting one body for another has been a ploy much used by General Heinrich Mueller of the Gestapo. It was he who coordinated the details of Bormann's disappearance. This is according to statements made by separate individuals working for three different intelligence services. The Berlin skull is from a body placed in the location of a freight yard, April 30th, 1945, by an SS Gestapo team commanded by General Mueller. It was placed there at that time, that skull, and then it's dug up in 1972. That's how long the plans were, and it's very important to this Mengele story to show how long these plans are worked. It was put in there by the Waffen-SS. Their account, he goes further into the book on the details on this. Another authority on Martin Bormann has said that Bormann planned his flight with extreme care as part of a grand design. He planned it, this quotation is from 1977. It was a scheme to lead future forensic and dental specialists astray. The London Daily Express termed the Frankfurt press conference by Willy Brandt's government a whitewash and said they were forever trying to free Martin Bormann from harassment. When they announced that this was proof that he was dead, they accused him of trying to stop the search for Bormann. The European press according to these allegations, made a deal between representatives of Bormann's Nazi group in exile in South America and the government of the Federal Republic of Germany. The speculation was that by doing so, the government itself would be free from the unending nagging pressure of continuing to search for Martin Bormann. And as a result of the Frankfurt press conference, Bormann was, without worldwide trumpeting, officially declared dead. And once he was dead, Dr. Horace Gauff, G-A-U-F-F, the state prosecutor for Hesse, the area where it was taking place, removed from the West German warrant for Bormann's arrest and the reward of $36,000 for Bormann's capture. Now, if they could say that Joseph Mengele is dead, this would get Mr. Helmut Kohl and the Bonn-Bitburg government off the backs of people of trying to look for and explain Mr. Felix Steinecker, Mr. Fritz Kramer, the Institute for Historical Review, the Swiss bank accounts for Joseph Mengele. It would get this government and Ronald Reagan and DeLorean and Gordon Novell's network of the Permandex, the British American Canadian corporation that became titled Permandex. This stopping it would get the Bonn government not responsible anymore. The rewards could be taken off, and for all purposes, they would say he's officially dead, like they could declare Oswald officially killed John Kennedy or Sirhan officially killed Robert Kennedy, and that would be the end of the story. Now, interestingly enough, in December of 84, that's not too long ago, 6 months ago, Jack Anderson had a report of Joseph Mengele in his newsletter. Jack Anderson said, a report is circulating inside the CIA that Joseph Mengele, the famous Nazi, is dead. And I sent my associate to Paraguay last month to find out if the report was true. And he goes on to say something very interesting about the Mengele story. He said, underground sources told me that the CIA report on Joseph Mengele's death is premature, and that it might even be deliberate disinformation intended to protect Mengele from Nazi hunters. Now, Jack Anderson gets reprints of my broadcast from Charles Spears, and he knows that I've been on this case of DeLorean, Klaus Barbie, and Joseph Mengele. So isn't it interesting that the CIA in December of 84, and I've been on this for 2 years, wanted to get the story of Mengele off their neck and end it by saying that he was dead. And he's traced the disinformation as being premature and coming from the Central Intelligence Agency. That would figure, right? Now, I've mentioned many times on the broadcast that I do have contacts that have been working on the Mengele story and supplying me with information for a long time. One of them is Brian Boylan, B-O-Y-L-A-N, and he's written a book that I've had mentioned on the air, haven't done enough yet, called The Final Trace. And the other fellow goes by the name of Charles. He is having press conferences, and if his name is in the news, then he identifies himself, then I'll share it with you. I don't want to put it on the air without his permission. But I talked with both of them yesterday on this story. Charles said that the real key to this case, he thinks, is Pop Buell, Edgar Buell, whose name I found in Covert Action that was published 2 years ago, and his relationship to Hal Buell and Joseph Mengele and the accounts in Switzerland. And he told me to pursue the Buell story, and that also the same people that have kept up with the Mengele story in South America told him 2 weeks ago, which would be around May the 25th, that Mengele has three options when he was leaving after the death story, that he was dead. They didn't say that he was going to pull the death story, but he was planning May 25th to go. There was Europe, Canada, or the United States. And, of course, with all of this going on, if he's declared legally dead, then he can move to any one of these places and continue the lifestyle that he has. Of course, Charles and Brian don't believe for a minute that this is Joseph Mengele, and they have given to the Associated Press and NBC copies of the SS dental records, which they said in Germany they didn't have, but which these two men, and they have also body measurements and facts about Joseph Mengele and surgeries and details that Bonn wants to forget about and wants to say this is Joseph Mengele, but they can use it. If they don't admit it isn't Mengele, then they'll go to more facts and information that they've had for years. In the book Aftermath by Ladislas Farrago, He refers to Dr. Goebbels' secretary, Wilfred von Oven, such a name. And I've told you before that Mr. von Oven was the source of contact to both Klaus Barbie and Joseph Mengele for Charles and Brian. And they told me about his name, and I was able to look it up in one book they know about him and have talked to him. And if Mengele were alive, why are they in touch with him or talk with him? And why was he the man to go through in order to contact Mengele, who in fact did not die in 1979? We'll continue on that in one moment. We'll take a 1-minute break and continue on the Joseph Mengele story.